Welcome to Smart in the City, the Babble podcast where we bring together top actors in the smart city arena, sparking dialogues and interactions around the stakeholders and themes most prevalent for today's citizens and tomorrow's generations. I am your host, Tamlin Shimizu, and I hope that you will enjoy this episode and gain knowledge and connections to drive the change for a better urban life. Smart in the City is brought to you by Babble Smart Cities. We enable processes from research and strategy development to co-creation and implementation. To learn more about us, please visit the Babble platform at babble-smartcities.eu. So a short intermission to tell you about the Autonomy Mobility World Expo. It's the world's largest annual gathering of international sustainable urban mobility stakeholders, welcoming 200 plus exhibitors, 300 plus speakers, 8,000 plus participants every year in March. Some activities. There's a startup village, city hub, two conference programs, test tracks, demos, B2B and B2G meetings, startup challenge, and innovation award ceremony. It will take place on the 22nd through the 23rd of March in Paris, and I will be there, and I'm looking forward to it and hope to see you there. Today, we are moving from the Republic of Ireland to Northern Ireland and to the capital city, Belfast. So Belfast, as you know, has a very rich history and is making strides and leaps in the smart city space. I'm sure you've heard a little bit about it, but we're going to hear from the source now. So I'm really excited to reveal more of this to all of you and welcome our very special guests we have today. So first, we have Deborah Colville, who is the City Innovation Manager and Head of Smart Belfast. So welcome, Deborah.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Lovely to have you. And also to join us today, sitting next to me, I have my dear colleague, Nikita Shetty. She is the UK and Ireland lead and senior consultant for Babble, and also has quite some history together with Belfast and with Deborah. So you guys know each other well. And you actually, to all of our listeners, if you go way back in our episodes, if you're one of those committed listeners, you've heard her once before on the podcast. And she also mentioned in that episode, actually, that the Belfast project was one of her favorites. So now she's going to tell you more about it too, together with Deborah. So welcome back, Nikita.
Very glad to be here, Tamlin. Thank you.
Yeah, really great always to be able to welcome a colleague on with a special guest and get the conversation going. Also, you won't hear me talking as much, which is always a good thing if you're tired of it. So I always start with the podcast with a little bit of a teaser, Deborah. So I hope you're ready. So we get warmed up. The teaser that we have prepared today is, I hope you can tell us a fact about Belfast that most people don't know. Do you have an idea?
Yeah, that's a good one. The Belfast Newsletter was the first paper outside of America to print news about the Declaration of Independence. And the ship carrying the first copy of the Declaration of Independence out of America was bound for London, but it ran into heavy storms off the north coast of Ireland and was forced to seek refuge in the port of Londonderry. And arrangements were made for the declaration to be sent by a fast horse to Belfast, where it would be passed to another ship for delivery to King George III in London. And the newsletter editor gained access to the document and printed the complete text on the front page of the paper in August 1776. So the newsletter first rolled off the presses in Belfast in 1737 and is the oldest English language daily paper still in circulation. And to this day, we have continued to be at the forefront of communications technology.
Wow, that's exciting. That's a great fact. And I don't think most people know that. So yeah, very nice. Good. Nikita, did you prepare a fact?
I did not. I really didn't know about this one for having been in Belfast so many times. So
No, it's okay. I excuse
hard.
You.
I tried hard with this one.
Yeah, you want to compete with that fact?
No, I don't think I can.
That's okay. Yeah, it's a pretty hard one to compete with. So thanks for getting us warmed up, Deborah. So I wonder now if you could give all of our listeners and me, it's actually our first time meeting as well. So it's really a pleasure to talk to you and I want to know more about Smart Belfast. Like, what's the story behind that? And also, you can tell us a little bit about how your story kind of intertwines with Smart Belfast as well.
Okay, yes, absolutely. Well, our journey with the Smart Belfast programme really started in 2017 when the council had published its first city plan and its vision for citizens of the city. And there was a real recognition at that time that to realise these ambitions, we needed to start to think differently about how we solve our challenges. And we saw how other cities were adopting new practices, new technologies. And we wanted to think of new ways that we could deliver for our citizens. So we looked at best practice around the world, examined our own strengths, our growing digital sector, recognised the fact that we had academic excellence right on our doorstep with two fantastic universities. So we saw a real opportunity to make a difference. And we ran several successful demonstrator projects that proved this approach. And from that, we were able then to set up a permanent innovation office in the organisation to drive organisational change, but mainly to support the city strategy. And the new Smart Belfast framework then, the Urban Innovation Framework, was launched in December 2022. So this is our second programme now going forward, and that outlines our ambitions for the next 3 years.
Wow, that's and how does your story fit into there? Like, what is your background, Deborah?
So my background is I've always been in the public sector. My master's was in information systems management. And I've always been fascinated and just excited by technology and the change that technology can bring, not just the technology itself, but how it can be used to make life easier and help people to access services or information. And so I've always been really, something I've always been really interested in. So I would have managed the software estate within Belfast City Council and also the business transformation programmes that enabled by technology. And then I very quickly wanted to look outside the council and start to look at some of the big problems that we had in the council, and started to realise that, what I knew from a technology background, bringing this together with academic excellence, and starting to look at how we can address public policy. So it just seemed to be the natural next step to start to look wider than the organisation. And I was, we've been very lucky here in Belfast City Council from a political leadership point of view, was at the back and from our politicians. We had a really fantastic chief executive who really backed our plans back then in 2017. And have a new chief executive who is exactly the same, wants to put innovation at the heart of the city and at the heart of the organisation. So that makes my job a lot easier as well. I'm sort of pushing at an open door.
Yeah, sounds like such an easy job. No, it sounds like you do a lot. So I'm glad to get digging into it. So maybe also, Nikita, it would be interesting to know, like, why are you here in this podcast? Like, what is your experience with Belfast? Any like key learnings or your story?
Yes, happy to share. I started working with Deborah and her team back in 2018. I'm trying to remember if it was 2018 or 19. I think 19. So it's been quite some years. And we supported Deborah and her team and also the neighboring local authorities with the Belfast Region City deal, with the development of the Smart and the Innovation District. So we actually had a stakeholder consultation program and a co-creation exercise with several different stakeholders in Belfast and also across the region, for the development of the digital and innovation activities within the Belfast Region City deal. So I've spent a lot of time pre-COVID in Belfast with Deborah and with her team.
Yeah, really interesting. It's always one of my favorite projects to hear about, because I'm always learning more and more every time someone mentions it again. And I've learned a lot. Maybe you can mention also about the stakeholder engagement, because I think that was a big part of it on the main lessons you took away from that work with Belfast.
I think for me, so we engaged with, Deborah, correct me if I'm wrong, but somewhere around 200 stakeholders during that period of 8 to 9 months when we were there. And a lot of them with Deborah and her colleagues from the City Innovation team joining us. And for me, one of the main learnings was, you know, how many interesting, relevant ideas that came up during the consultation, because the stakeholders know the place so well, they really understand the needs much better. They can connect many of the innovation activities that are already happening. As Deborah mentioned, the ecosystem in Belfast is really strong, and the council, the universities are working very hard to strengthen this. So it was amazing to learn about innovative project ideas that came up during the consultation. I think something interesting to mention would be, because Deborah, I read Belfast Harbour is kickstarting the project very soon for autonomous vehicle shuttle bus between the Titanic Quarter train station and the Catalyst, so in the Belfast Harbour estate. And it was actually one of the ideas that had come up during the consultation from the stakeholders. They'd mentioned the need for this because the train station was far away from, you know, the accessibility was not very good. The path was not very safe. So it was one of the ideas that came up back then. And it's amazing to see it being implemented now. So there are many such ideas, but I think that just came up in news last week, this week, actually. So many amazing ideas that came up from the stakeholders that have gone ahead into the framework now.
Yeah, that's really nice. So Deborah, also, I'm wondering, like, from your point of view, why start with like a district approach? Can you maybe outline a bit of the like benefits and challenges with this approach?
I suppose with the city centers where we're going to focus our smart district activity, there is a lot of planned investments happening in the city centre itself. We have an ambition to transform the city centre into a more livable city centre offering. So there are really ambitious plans for the whole city, over the next sort of 10, 15 years, but a lot of activity and focus in the city centre. And the smart district was a way in which that we could work in a very rich environment for collaborative innovation and to deliver on our plans. It's a perfect mix of multinational companies, of innovative local startups and entrepreneurs. We have innovation hubs, we have world-class centres of excellence, and as I say, substantial investment in regeneration as well. We've got good digital infrastructure. And I suppose this is Smart District. It's the place where they work, they live, they visit, and there are just a lot of characteristics that just all came together for us in the Smart District, and placing that in the city centre itself. And the key thing for us is, though, it's going to be a proving ground, if you like, for technology and working with our citizens very closely in the adoption of new technology. But that's just the first step, because what we want to do then is to be able to replicate and scale that up across the whole of the city.
When does that start, the replication?
We've already been trialing and testing lots of projects, and we've got a major test bed in design at the moment. So we have Belfast Region City D, that you will be very familiar with, Nikita. We have a process to go through to develop the business cases to draw down money for some of the major work that we want to do. But we're still very much focused on our initial phase of the smart city development. And some of our projects have now moved out into communities, and one of the projects hopefully I'll get a chance to talk about in this podcast will be our Homes for Healthy Aging. And that's just one example of taking technologies that some of our creative technology companies have developed, taking some of the great citizen science approaches with the universities, and actually taking that into a community to support people at the community level.
Very, very nice. Yeah, so now I understand that Nikita has some questions for you too. So now I get to sit back and relax a little bit and hear, you know, you guys get to chat a little. So
I'm very happy to do that. Thank you, Tamlin. Deborah, you mentioned the Belfast Region City deal, and I think it has been transformational for Belfast, right? But I remember from our conversations, also when we were working together, that it wasn't initially the plan to have the digital and innovation parts in the city deal, and you kind of really pushed for this, and you've also been successful in accessing many different funding sources. As we've been working with cities over the past years, many cities, regions and so on highlight the need for funding to kickstart their smart city activities as one of the main challenges. What do you think was, you know, the success factor for you when it came to being able to access all these different funding pots previously within the local council and then also moving ahead UK and other funding sources? What do you think worked for you?
Well, I think the most important thing is that we weren't just about chasing the money. For us, it was about the challenge. What is the problem we're trying to solve? Who does that problem impact? Who can affect change and make things happen? So we were very careful about making sure that it wasn't about, in the first instance, chasing the money. It was about the challenge, but then we very quickly had to work out, okay, where is the money? So you do have to get there at some stage because you can't do anything if you don't have the resources. So I think the importance of partnership working and networking and agreeing common challenges, trying to develop, you know, win-win scenarios. And for us, it was about putting together projects that built on the appetite of our businesses and they give opportunities to businesses. It, you know, built on academic research that was already being carried out in that particular area. And of course, supporting public sector policy development. So it's important, I think, to understand the funding landscape once you have your challenge defined. And I think people cut corners with the challenge definition. Mm-hmm. It could take a very long time. We had some very successful projects and one particular project, and you know, it took 8 months to define the challenge. Because sometimes you have to bring in experts, you have to open up your processes, you have to identify where's the data, and you want to maximize the potential for a really good solution or idea. And you have to make that easy for academia and for businesses to work together on that. So I think the other thing that we tried to do was to have some oven-baked ideas. So where you have some partners that you're aligning with around particular challenges, to have these developing relationships and almost, you know, developing projects to a certain level so that when funding calls come out, you know, you can quickly mobilize your partners and you can apply for some of these funding calls. And the windows of opportunity are quite short, and you wait for a fund to come out, and then you have 6 weeks to pull together a significant business case. So I think getting into that state of readiness is very important. And as you've mentioned, of course, you know, the biggest achievement for us is the fact that we were able to develop a successful business case. Right. Where we got money from the UK Treasury for that digital innovation programme as part of the Belfast Region City deal. And that's where we are at the moment, trying to bring forward those business cases so that we can get into delivery and make some of these things happen. We've also been lucky that we've got money from the Rockefeller 100 Resilient Cities programme. So we were able to set in place the first climate commissioner in Belfast. You know, we've received money from the Department for Finance, and we've received money from a whole range of sources again. I think that approach of a very focused and targeted challenge, but bringing together that cross-sectoral approach has worked very well for us.
That's a great answer, Deborah. Thank you. So it's more about being ready, actually, in terms of having that value proposition ready, what you are bringing in, getting the network together much before the call comes out. I definitely agree. I think several times public sector partners are struggling to put together the consortium after the call is out, and that's probably too late already. So I think that's very good advice for the city's listeners listening in today. Another important point you mentioned was the political leadership and how you were lucky to have this support from the political leaders. I also think, you know, you managed the stakeholders very well within your ecosystem. So I think it was very impressive when we were working together on how you could get access to these stakeholders, were able to convince them. And I think that was very key in making the project successful when we were working together. Do you have any advice for other city listeners in terms of, you know, what helped there? Because I think there could be a luck factor, but I think there's also hard work put in there and, you know, a strategy you've used, which I think worked out. So have there been things that you followed, maybe getting their buy-in and so on regularly, keeping them up to date, or what was it that helped?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, in any partnership, there has to be something in it for everyone. So really getting an understanding of the, you know, where are the partners coming from, what are they trying to achieve? And sometimes you get a partner engaged because they think this project sounds fantastic. But when things get tough and when resources get tight, this is when partners can fall off because there's not enough in it to keep them in it. So, you know, partners need to have skin in the game. There needs to be a reason. They've got to put the resource behind it. Sometimes there's money behind it. They need to have a problem they want solved. So it's very important to design and co-design with partners what the program is going to be. And so that everyone is getting something out of it. I think that's really, really important. And I think there are issues in any project, developing any project, any partnership. But what you're trying to do is maximize the potential of success. And sometimes you have to chunk things down so it's not too complicated and it doesn't have too heavy a level of governance and bureaucracy and program and project management, but just enough. And so, you know, from a public sector perspective, we need to have assurance that funds and money and staff time are being spent on the things that are going to benefit the ratepayers. And, you know, for the universities, they want to bring you know, some of the work and research they're doing. They want to see an impact of that research. And of course, for the businesses, they want to very quickly be able to develop their offering and test it quickly and also get public sector and others to purchase those offerings. So I think understanding where all of those partners are coming from and understanding that there are three very different cultures there, but that are all very much focused on achieving the same goal. And solving the same problem. So, you know, businesses need quick decisions and public sector, you know, have processes that slow the decision-making down a wee bit. So so managing all of that, yes, is you know, it can be very time-consuming, but it's very worth it. And so it is, it's smooth and easy, you know, for everyone. And I think smaller, more agile, low cost, low risk type projects, and building them up, is really, you know, is certainly was the way to go for us at the start. Now we're moving to more transformational, larger projects, but you need to do that to get the working partnership going, and to build trust, and you know, you have to trust the partner, you have to cover each other's backs, and you only do that by getting your sleeves rolled up, getting in together and actually delivering something together.
Yeah, and probably helps getting buy-in, right? These initial small projects also from the executives and all other stakeholders you mentioned.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. I was wondering if you ever came across stakeholders who were probably, you know, difficult to work with, or it was difficult to get buy-in in the process, and have you dealt with such situations when, you know, there are key stakeholders who might not be interested at that, right? Maybe it's not the right time, or yeah, do not have the resources for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the running theme, and this is something that we come across all the time. So, and we have found that at times we have a really good idea. We know we've got, you know, maybe SMEs that have a real appetite to do something, or there's a piece of academic research that would really support this, and, you know, we could bring academic partners along, but we can't get the public sector involved. Sometimes it's a matter of timing, and you do have to just say, you know, something, we're going to have to come back to this. And we've, you know, with different projects where the timing wasn't right, but 2 years down the road, this is exactly where that partner is thinking. So I think you have to recognize some things are not, you know, always going to work and start and not always going to align to make a project happen. But it's finding the sweet spots. It's finding those particular projects where you do have partners, you're all at the right stage at the right time and can make something happen. And, you know, you have to work with the energy and the enthusiasm. And if partners have the energy and the enthusiasm to get something done, they will find ways and they will find the resources, they will reorganize, they will do what they have to do to make something happen. So one of the things that's worked really well for Belfast is leadership. And the fact that our city leaders have come together to take a strategic approach to developing the digital innovation direction for the city. And this is a group of chief executives from across the city, our anchor institutions, the chief executive of Belfast City Council, of Belfast Harbour, Invest NI, Catalyst, of the Belfast Met, and also the Vice Chancellors of our two universities. And these city leaders come together to look at the strategic direction within the city and are really committed to transforming the city and supporting the economy. And, you know, what they do is big investments that are coming into the city or new projects and initiatives, these partners will align and back the other partners up. They will open doors there and remove obstacles. And they will look at that alignment piece and that integration of programmes and projects across the city. And I think that's a real plus for Belfast, where we have investors or where we have you know, interest in common and developing projects with us and collaborating with us. You know, there's a front door there. And to come and talk to the city, and you get all of those partners around the table, and you can make your presentation and bring forward proposals. So the leadership in the city, of course, that includes our political leadership as well. He backs our political representatives, you know, back this move as well, and see the benefit to society and to citizens, but also the benefit to our economy. So we're really you know, we're very fortunate that we actually have that. We know a lot of cities don't. So I think that's been a big plus for our programme going forward.
Definitely. I remember when we were working also with Peter Potain from the Brain Pod Smart District together with you on brokering this partnership, that there was a lot of discussion also on, you know, what would this partnership mean in practice, right? So all the executives, the leadership were also interested in figuring out what would this mean in practice in terms of when a new project comes up. For you now, when this partnership is in place, is it that just for others to know, and, you know, if they want to replicate something like this, is it that each partner brings in specific resources into this partnership, or is it more a strategic group now where the leaders are meeting and taking strategic decisions on specific topics? Or is there also a practical element in it in terms of, you know, working together and sharing resources and funds and so on?
I mean, it's a bit of all of that. So this group has been able to influence the UK government in terms of the strategic approach to investment here in Northern Ireland in infrastructure and in the economy. So as a group on a very strategic level, being a voice for not just Belfast, actually, but for Northern Ireland, You know, they've been very effective in some of these consultations that come out from the UK government. There's also a very regional focus as well, although it's called Innovation City Belfast. You know, any decisions or discussions are always in support of the wider region, wider Belfast region, and also the whole of Northern Ireland as well. And then there's a whole layer of programmes and projects that are also underway that these leaders are behind and have been investing in and really are committed to making sure are delivered and are successful. So, for example, the development of an innovation district, you know, looking at that growing some of our, you know, our SMEs and our clusters and in that particular area, and then you know, that translational research with academia and businesses to help, you know, with the development of deep tech and new products and services. And then we have the smart port, and that is the harbour itself, you know, wanting to or having an ambition to be the greenest, cleanest port in the world and doing some very fantastic, innovative things, which is absolutely brilliant. And then, of course, we have the Smart District, and whilst it's led and delivered from Belfast City Council, it is also on the table with Innovation City Belfast, so that there's a real willingness to make sure that all of these projects together, you know, are integrated and, you know, they support each other, and we can just maximise the potential of each of them.
Definitely. That's very interesting and very impactful, actually, the long-reaching impact that this group would have. You also mentioned the Healthy Aging Project in the beginning, which is also going to be part of the Smart District, right? Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
Yes. And in those first sort of 4 years, we had delivered around 47 projects, and all of them have been fantastic projects, so I don't like just picking one out, and it's like choosing a favourite child or something. you know, we have many testimonials from organisations and businesses of new solutions and platforms, learning that they've had from taking part in lots of the projects that we have run. But I mention that because, you know, from several standpoints, it brought together so many, you know, partners across the ecosystem. It's led by Ulster University, Queen's University is involved, and the Local Housing Association, our team, the City Innovation team, Belfast City Council, and of course many SMEs involved in the delivery of that project. And we got funding from the Connected Places Catapult, and the aim was to test out ways in which we can support elderly people to live longer in their homes and to tackle isolation and loneliness. And, you know, one part of this trial was to bring those elderly people into a test bed environment that we had set up, where they could test out and trial out different technologies. And cohorts of elderly people came in, tried the solutions, chatted to the technical advisors, to the SMEs, about their fears of technology and, you know, what they thought would work and what they thought wouldn't work. And, you know, they really did enjoy it. So it was a really good collaborative, innovative project, which, you know, included local SMEs, not just our, you know, business, industry and government. But this was a real example of, you know, given that our citizens are the, you know, the heart of everything we do, and it's just a really good example of how we brought those citizens in to be involved in the outworkings of that trial. And now that's moving on to stage two of that program. So it was a, you know, it was very interesting, but it was a very very rewarding project.
Definitely. And a lot of healthy aging projects, actually, health-related projects, smart city projects, have concerns sometimes around data and collection of private data. Was this a topic that you had to address in the project, or was this not a big concern for the participants?
Yes, you know, data and the, you know, data privacy and security, all of those things are so important for citizens. And one of the programs that we have in development is our Citizens Opportunity for Digital Innovation program. We call it CODIG. And that seeks to build the capacity and the capability of our communities and citizens to be able to engage in new and innovative service provision, and to be able to use modern platforms and online platforms to be able to employment opportunities, help opportunities, and just understand how to avail of opportunity in the technological world that we know today. And so empowering citizens to make choices about where their data goes, if they want to share their data or not, is very important.
Definitely. I could actually continue asking you many more questions about specific projects and everything that you've done, but I'm very conscious of time now. So I'm going to hand over to my colleague Tamlin again for the next segment.
Yes, thank you so much for taking over, Nikita. It was the most chill interview session I've ever had. So I got to sit back and just listen to you all talk about interesting things. So Deborah, now is also a fun part of the podcast. Not saying that your part wasn't fun, Nikita. But
I'm taking offense.
But you know, we're going into now a bit of a segment that we like to do. And this segment is, I say this in every episode that I do this segment in, but it's one of my favorite segments. And it's called Roll with the Punches.
Roll with the Punches. Answer this or that questions quickly and with your first instincts.
And don't worry, it's just, you know, fun. And you can always, so we'll go through it quite quickly, but when we get to the end, you can always go back and explain, or you can say, I couldn't really choose. But you have to choose in the first section, though. So.
And there's no right answer, so don't worry.
Yeah, there's no right answers. That's what the point of it is to make you think, though. So are you ready?
As I'll ever be.
True. All right. Innovation or co-creation?
Co-creation.
Past or future?
Future.
Smart district or innovation district?
Smart district.
Smart district. Okay. Net zero or economic growth is the main challenge for Belfast.
Economic growth.
AI or VR?
AI.
AI or AR?
AI.
Good. You made it through.
Yay!
Yay. Do you want to explain any of your answers?
Maybe these, like choosing the smart district.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, the innovation district and the smart district, whilst they have slightly different objectives, one very much economic growth and then the other one societal impact, and they're two sides of the one coin, and I think both are really important, and we have both in development in our city, and both very complementary and self-supporting. So I had to choose one, and of course I'm going to choose the one that I'm leading, but both, I would say, are definitely going to be fantastic initiatives for the city.
Yeah, perfect. Now, kind of leading off of that, but it's the question that we ask every single guest that comes on, and it is, to you, what is a smart city?
Okay. I suppose a smart city is a city that's clear about what it needs to achieve for its citizens, and actively sets in place mechanisms to harness innovation technologies and ideas from our fantastic SMEs, bringing in world-leading research from our fantastic universities, and aligning them to achieve those particular ambitions. And I think also as a smart city, you know, we need to recognise the richness of opportunity from the sharing of data, from opening our doors to businesses and collaborators globally. Again, all with the aim and focus of delivering new and better services, supporting our economy, and ultimately just helping to deliver a richer quality of life for our citizens.
Yeah, perfect. Do you agree, Nikita?
I definitely do agree with that definition.
I'm so pleased to find that.
You don't want to contradict anything?
No, I think we've learned a lot from each other when we were working together and actually coming up with what Smart Belfast and the Smart District mean. So I think that's everything I would have
said. You grew together
said.
With yes. the definition. That's good. We actually asked ChatGPT also that question. Maybe in the next episode, I will share the definition that AI gave us as well. It's quite good too.
Yeah.
But Deborah, you're right up there with the AI. So. hopefully that wasn't too painful for you, Deborah. I really enjoyed it and enjoyed having you here, Nikita. So thank you.
Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. You're welcome. And of course, the star of the show. Thank you so much for joining us, Deborah. Your input and perspectives are really, really valuable. And I'm sure the listeners are really going to enjoy hearing all about it. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And to all of our listeners, don't forget you can always create a free account on babble-smartcities.eu to find out more about smart city projects, solutions, implementations. You can find great use cases from Belfast also. So thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. I'll see you at the next stop on the journey to a better urban life.